Coming to you from Indianapolis, Indiana, the gaming capital of the world, it's episode 43 of Game On with Cody and John.
This is Game On with Cody and John, the uncommon podcast for the common gamer, bringing you the latest and greatest from the world of tabletop gaming, board games, card games, RPGs, and miniatures wargaming, news and discussions on gaming and gamer culture, plus reviews of some of the best games on the market. And now, from the Game On Studios in Indianapolis, Indiana, here are Cody Jones and John Richard.
Well, howdy gamers, it is Game On with Cody and John. I'm Cody.
And I'm John. Welcome to the Uncommon Podcast for the Common Gamer. We are a podcast about all sorts of tabletop games, board games, card games, role-playing games, miniatures, tiddlywinks, and shuffleboard, and all
everything
kinds
in
of
between.
Good stuff. Yep. Coming to you from beautiful Indianapolis, Indiana, the gaming capital of the world. Cody, how's it going?
It is going. Spring has sprung, and I'm kind of counting down to summer already.
This is like episode 3 of Spring.
Yeah, I know. Really?
Spring has definitely sprung at this point. Yeah, lots of stuff going on here in the gaming capital. Lots of stuff going on with me because I am now in my fourth week of blissful unemployment. Something I hadn't mentioned on the show before, but I did actually get laid off from my job, and so I've been looking for a new one. I actually have found a new job and going to be starting that next week, so I've had plenty of time to sit and languish and play games and
paint,
sit in a beanbag chair and eat Cheetos and all that good stuff. So, but anyway, so it's given us lots of time to talk about some really good stuff in gaming. And Cody, what are we talking about today?
Well, we're going to be talking about technology at your game table, and this could be for both board games and RPGs. With the popularity of smartphones and netbooks and things like the iPad, you know, there's a lot of things out there that can add to your gaming experience, but also a lot of things that can take away. So we'll talk about it.
That's right. We'll discuss kind of the positives and negatives of all this new technology. And in our Bytrider and I, we're going to be reviewing Nuns on the Run. They're on the Run from Mayfair Games. I don't even know what to say about it. It's a really wacky sort of a game, yeah. And we'll give you a full review on that. And what else are we doing?
Well, the Game On Inbox, of course.
Oh, that's right. And that starts
now.
The Game On Inbox.
Send us an email at gameoninbox@gmail.com.
Do it.
Well, it is the Game On Inbox, your best source for gaming news, information, and all other good stuff like that. But as always, we're going to start off with talking about our wonderful sponsor. They're wonderful.
They're wonderful. We're not paying penance anymore.
No. Our wonderful sponsor, Myriad Games. So, Cody, why don't you tell us what's going on with them?
That's right. Game On with Cody and John is proudly sponsored by Myriad Games on behalf of friendly professional game stores everywhere. I got that out.
Yeah. Not the unfriendly ones.
Want some games? No.
They're professional, but they're mean.
And we just want to tell you to check out Myriad Games at myriadgames.com. You can get involved in their very cool game share program, get involved in their MVP memberships, which we are very, I almost said proud customer. Proud customers.
Yeah, no, we're enjoying
it. We're happy customers. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. Get involved in that. And if you liked our review of Mystery Express last episode, if you check their Session Impressions show, they just did an episode on it, and it's definitely worth a listen.
Yeah, check it out. Well, let's move on to the next part of the Game On Inbox. You know, you folks who listen all the time, you know how this goes. Yep. It's on to games we've been playing. So, Cody, what have you been playing?
I finally got around to playing a game I won at HoosierCon for winning one of the Dominion tournaments, and it was A Castle for All Seasons by Rio Grande Games.
What?
Yes, a Euro game, but I won it, so I'm like, well, I gotta play it.
You played it without me there?
I did.
Usually I have to give you oxygen or something while these games are going on.
I was muddling through the rules. I'm like, oh, okay. It actually was not a bad game. It's a lot like, it's kind of a mix between like Stone Age and Puerto Rico, because it's worker play placement, but it has, you know, you're picking roles every turn, so it was good with the bad there. But it's actually a pretty neat little game, and it's really fast. And I can't believe I'm saying this about a Euro. It's almost too fast, like 45
too fast for a Euro. Yeah, no.
But I mean, like, the game is halfway over before you really have developed your strategy.
Yeah.
So it actually has a little bit of panic involved in it. So I thought it was okay. I'm probably going to trade it, though.
It had really great artwork. It looked like the board was really pretty.
Yes.
I want to say that it was, I believe it's Michael Menzel, who's the guy who did the board artwork for Stone Age, I think, did the same artwork for that game. So.
Yeah, the game looked very good. It looked like a nice Ameritrash game, but it was good for what it was. Not my cup of tea. Everyone around the table kind of had that.
Okay.
You know, we all just kind of shook our heads. Yeah, that was fine.
Cool. I'd like to check that out sometime. Yep.
Other things I've been playing, a lot more Castles and Crusades. I mentioned that, I believe, last episode. Yep. Kind of the first edition retro clone, if you will, of D&D. It has the first edition feel, but it uses the D20 mechanics in later editions, and it is a lot of fun. I'm kind of getting into that. Went on a trip to see the in-laws up in beautiful Aurora, Illinois. Which is a suburb of Chicago. Played a few things there. Played Cleopatra in the Society of Architects.
Ooh.
I had not played that in a while. That's a good game.
It is.
And you can get it for dirt cheap nowadays.
Apparently very overproduced by Days of Wonder. Oh. The only thing I can think of is that they just had a ton of copies because with the high supply, the price seems to have gone down. Because I've never heard anybody say that it's a bad game.
Yeah.
And I really like it too.
Yeah. Let's see. I played Small World. A lot of Summoner Wars, which I finally won my first game.
No.
Like 15 games in, I'm on a 2-game winning streak, so I may just quit the game.
Awesome. Well, no, not awesome. No, keep playing.
And then we kind of went out to a restaurant, and we're enjoying some drinks, and we played Monopoly Deal.
Okay.
I really like those small games you can take if you go to the bar or the pub or whatever. And play it. And Monopoly Deal worked really well. And
it is a surprisingly good card game for the mass market.
Yeah, that's right. We were at Walmart and found that they had it on clearance for like $4.
Wow,
you know, nice. We had played it and I liked it, but I'd kind of forgotten about it.
Yeah.
And I saw it there. I'm like, oh, well, heck yeah, I'll pick it up. And man, you know, we got a lot of flack for saying Monopoly was a passable game last episode. Monopoly Deal, better than Monopoly by far, which is not that hard to do.
I want to say that there's a whole bunch of card games that they're coming out with. Is it Parker Brothers, Mitten, Hasbro?
It's Hasbro.
Hasborg. Yeah. But they're coming out with, like, they came out with Scrabble Slam card game. I think there's like a Sorry card game. Huh. They're really releasing this new line of these smaller, you know, less expensive card games.
So. You know, it's funny because they're probably just mostly money grabs. Like, let's slap together a card game. But Monopoly Deal is really, really good.
That's a nice
light game. So that's what I've been playing. John, what have you been playing?
Well, mainly I had a one game night this past week where Cody and Kaylin came over, and I'd been wanting to get together since, like I mentioned in the intro, I got laid off from my job. So that means that for those of you who listened for a long time, you know, our lunch table segments that were at my previous employer, well, you know, I'm afraid those have come to a close now because I have no longer have access to that lunch table.
They have been reallocated.
That's right. But, you know, of course, I'm still friends with all of those folks, and so I want to be deliberate about making sure that those folks come over and friends come over to play games at my house. And so I was able to invite our friend of the podcast, Single L.
Yep. Good to see him again.
Came over. And so we had some 4-player excitement. And before Cody and Kaylin showed up, Lloyd and I played a game of Campaign Manager 2008, mm-hmm. where I played the valiant John Sidney McCain and Lloyd played that other guy. yes, President Obama. Yeah. And so, and we were able to change history. I won the game and, Lloyd wanted to mention,
good
though,
man.
He wanted to mention though that he did Barack. He Baracked the vote in Indiana. He won Indiana.
Well, that's all you need to win.
I guess so.
And did Senator O'Kane make an appearance?
He did not.
Oh, that's a shame.
Bagpipes. And no, it was a really good game, and I think Single L enjoyed it. And then we played a 3-player game of Small World.
That we did.
I hadn't played Small World in more than 6 months. I mean, it's been a long time, and I forgot how much I really enjoy that game. And it's so easy to teach and to kind of grasp the concept of. And maybe my favorite part is, I'm not sure if I know of a game that scales as well as Small World does, mm-hmm. with those different sized boards. It comes with 2 boards that are double-sided for 2 to 5 players. And I think it just scales just great. And so you just feel that sort of tension, that tightness of the gameplay really well. So enjoyed that one. Also enjoyed it because of the fact that I won by a ton.
you know, I was looking at Small World on Board Game Geek, and I went back and looked at the game it was based off, that Vinci, I think
it
was. And that tells you how good of a job the Days of Wonder production staff does. Because have you seen the board for Vinci?
No.
Oh, it's terrible. It's like a fifth grader did it. I mean, it's just this really unappealing, unattractive game. You're like, oh. And then you look at, but you see where it's, you know, very similar to Small World. And then you look at the Small World board and you're like, oh, well, this is much better. Check it out. It's very surprising. It's like this really abstract, poorly done map of Europe.
See, it shows that presentation matters. You know?
Yeah.
And as much as the rules are the game. Mm-hmm. You know, the rules are what make the game. But you know, I think about other games, board games that maybe I don't own, but that I know of. Maybe I know the rules well enough that I could actually cobble together a version of game X or whatever with my own, you know, cards and little pawns or whatever. I could use G.I. Joe action figures or whatever. Yeah. But it's not going to be the same experience. You know, those components really do matter. So that, yeah, and Days of Wonder, I think, is a great example of a company that takes pride in that. So speaking of Days of Wonder, we also played a four-player game of Mystery Express, you know, the game Come we reviewed last episode. And it was a good game experience. I think we said in our review that it was a game that we needed to play a couple more times to really get a feel for it. So this second play of the game felt a lot different, don't you think?
Yeah, I'm really warming to it. I actually did a lot worse this time around, but I figured out how to figure out the time,
okay,
which I thought was the hardest, and now I've kind of figured out. I consider it a foolproof system. So,
which he is not going to reveal either to me or to you, listeners. That's so right. If you want to bribe Cody, feel free to...
That's gameoninbox@gmail.com.
Yeah, attention Cody. And maybe he can give you some of his secrets there. But I did not do nearly as well in the time category. But I did win that game too. So that was fun.
It's a good game.
Yeah. We haven't had a chance to play much War Machine lately, but I have been sort of trying to catch up on the models that I've purchased that I haven't had a chance to assemble and paint yet. I don't want to ever get into the situation where I have just always a ton of stuff that I haven't painted. I know that you guys who are into miniatures wargaming are probably laughing at that idea, because that seems to be a real common thing of, well, I've got 15 models that I haven't painted, but I'm trying to keep that to a minimum. And so I have a second Vanquisher Warjack for Menoth that I've painted up, and I've called him, well, Vanquisher 2.0 in photo negative. And so I basically took the Vanquisher that's sort of painted in the gallery colors for Menoth, and I did sort of a reverse painting. So like everything that was white, I made red. Everything that was red, I made white. Things that were black were white. And I think it turned out pretty good.
It looks cool. It looks really cool.
Really, in retrospect, I probably should have painted everything that color scheme, because it looks even cooler, I think.
It doesn't even really look Kador, because it's more like this blood red.
Burgundy,
you know?
Yeah, instead of
this kind of bright, you know.
Yeah. So still enjoying that. So I painted those. I had a whole bunch of models, Holy Zealots and Choir of Menoth guys that I had finished that I hadn't based. So I had a big basing party last week and based about 12 different guys, and so I'm ready to go. And actually this weekend, actually by the time this episode releases, we will have already played a big throwdown with some of our friends that we have gotten into the game of War Machines.
Yeah, we kind of had a Christmas truce sort of a thing, because it seems like a lot of us bought figures at the same time. And since we all kind of have that same philosophy of get them painted before you play them, we haven't played in a few weeks because we've all been, you know, I just finished. But yeah, we're going to have a big throwdown. My wife still has yet to finish painting her battle box.
Yeah, so, she'll get there.
and she loves getting bugged about it, so I'll bug her yet again on this show.
Good, good. It's saved for posterity now.
I use my power for good.
Awesome. So yeah, we're still enjoying War Machine quite a bit. I think that's all I've been playing.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's move on to some emails that we've gotten in the Game On inbox, and I'll go ahead and start off. We got an email from Colbert Rahal, who had sent us a message, you might remember, a few weeks ago about for the Game On, what's it called? The GM Academy.
That's right.
And
the thing.
Yeah, the thing in the place. Asking us for an sort of an introductory role-playing game that you could try. And you had mentioned D&D 4.0 as that. And so he sent us a follow-up email. He says, hey there, fellas. Just wanted to say thanks for reading my original email on the air and the suggestion for D&D 4.0. He says, interestingly enough, in between the time I sent the email and you read it on the air, I did fall upon a wonderful intro RPG that all my friends totally dig, Dragon Age by Green Ronin Publishing. I can't rave enough about this RPG, everything from its old-school feel, accessibility, and surprising depth. Says, currently I play using a program called Map Tools, which lets me play with friends either online when they can't make it over, or displayed on my TV so they have a map in front of them to help with battles and exploring. Oh, it sounds like a technology thing. he says, I'll definitely take a look into D&D 4.0, as I'm always open and appreciate your advice, but I'm thinking Dragon Age is a real winner, especially for people who know the video game but are new to the board game and pen and paper RPG world. Cheers, Colbert.
Yeah, I've heard actually a lot of good things about that. When I first heard they were making an RPG of it, I thought they were just kind of striking while the iron's hot. I'm like, yeah, oh, it'll be this really bad knockoff. I've heard it's really good for newbies, and that even if you're not familiar with the video game, it's still a pretty good system. So, awesome. Hey, if you're having fun with it, don't even worry about 4.0. Just keep playing that.
Play
by
the thing,
all means.
Play what you like there. So.
That's right.
Awesome.
All right, we got another email from Philip Hoffman, who writes, and he says, hey, guys.
Hey.
Hey. I thought that you and the listeners would like to know that Plaid Hat Games is now offering the premium board for Summoner Wars as a pre-order.
Ooh.
And we mentioned this last time that there was kind of rumblings that they were going to do it. They're doing it. They're doing it. It's only $14.95, and they've got kind of a cool deal here because as soon as they get 400 pre-orders, they'll print and ship them immediately. And after only 10 days, they're at about 183 of 400. He told us to pass on the news. Duly noted.
We're doing it.
And let's support this new company and get these boards out. Yeah, I mean, I'm thinking of getting... From what I've read, each board is actually two separate halves that... quad fold, so you can still actually kind of carry it all in a small package and then whip out these boards and
because
I played a bunch this weekend and the paper board, you know, it's functional, but man, it gets kind of annoying after a while,
right?
So if you go to plaidhatgames.com, you can pre-order that. You can also go ahead and pre-order the two new factions, the I believe it's the Vanguards and the Fallen Kingdoms. We'll go with
like
that.
Undead, or
yeah, it's like kind of an angelic human faction and then an undead faction.
Neat.
And I believe they have an offer right now where if you pre-order anything, you get a promo mercenary card, the mercenary Con Queso.
Con Queso,
which is like a rat guy.
Very nice.
So definitely support this great game. I think this game's going places. So check it out, plaidhatgames.com.
Awesome. And one more email here in the Game On inbox, and this is actually from quite a few weeks ago. I forgot to mention it on our last show, but I wanted to make sure I got it in here. This is from Sean Sullivan. He says, "Hello, gents. I'm afraid that you fine gentlemen may have deferred playing World in Flames for the wrong reason. Now, you may remember that when we had our voicemail contest and had some folks call in to give suggestions for games we could review, one gentleman suggested World in Flames. And I said that, well, I'll finish the email here. So specifically, you mentioned that you can't bring yourselves to undertake a board game with a stated playing time of 10 hours. Because it was 6,000 minutes, right?
Right.
While this may be a reasonable perspective, I would invite Cody Cody and John, I guess, to revisit their math and try converting 6,000 minutes into hours again. Oops.
<Yeah. laughs>
So you may find yourself with an entirely new reason to defer any play of World in Flames. Okay, Sean. Well, apparently we're not math geniuses because we can't divide by...
Hey, so, I'm an artist. I got an excuse. You're a scientist.
I know. Mean, I have no excuse. So 6,000 minutes is 100 hours, not 10 hours.
Well, now I definitely don't want to play.
Yeah, no, definitely not. So thanks for clearing that up for us, Sean. And
that was probably the best... I guess the best way to word the email to be like, hey, your math's off. He's like, what? Well, 10 hours is a perfectly good reason to not play it. Perhaps you should.
Perhaps, yeah, you might have an even better reason.
Very proper way to do it. Yeah, so that's appreciated.
Thanks for not making us feel too stupid. So, you know, those are the emails we've gotten in the Game On inbox. We do appreciate it. And if you ever have anything you want to tell us, then feel free to write us at the Game On inbox.
At gameoninbox@gmail.com.
And even though we don't have a contest going on this episode, we would also invite you to check out our voicemail box, our new way to communicate with us, where you may be able to hear yourself here on the show. And that voicemail number is
4138-GAME-ON.
That's right. That's 413-842-6366. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Operators are standing by to hear from you.
You know, I think we want to do another edition of the GM Academy soon. So if you have any GM Academy questions, go ahead and use the voicemail and... we'll get those answered.
Absolutely. And we also want to tell you about something we've got coming up for our next episode, and that is the return of the Game On Seal of Approval.
That's right.
Now, for those of you who have been listening for a long time, you might be wondering, what's going on, Cody and John, because you mentioned this back in, I think, February or March. It was like 3 months ago, and haven't heard anything. Now, the Game On Seal of Approval, for those of you who don't know, is our new program for recognizing greatness in friendly professional game stores, where you can write us in or call us and tell us about a great professional game store where you live, and we will contact them, and we want to find out some of the great things about them, and then we want to give them this special award, this honor from us. Because we're, we have a lot of clout.
Whatever that's worth, yeah. No,
well, yeah, whatever. So, but it'll be an opportunity to expose people to great game stores that they might not know about. And if you don't have a great game store near you, it might give you some good ideas as to how to improve it. So we have, from our first episode where we did that a few months ago, we have received several nominations, and just with everything that's been going on with life and my job and all that kind of stuff, just haven't gotten around to really digging into this. But next episode,
We've picked our winner.
That's right. We've picked our first recipient, and we're going to be contacting them. We'll be bringing you, hopefully, a phone interview with them. And at the very least, we'll be telling you a whole lot about this particular game store and what they have to offer. So stay tuned, and we'll be bringing you our first seal of approval recipient soon.
I'm excited.
I am too. All right, well, let's move on to just a little bit of gaming news before we close out the inbox. And the first thing that I found recently is on the Days of Wonder website. They have released some pictures of a new expansion to Memoir 44 that they're going to be releasing called Breakthrough. Ooh. And this is going to be a book that has 15 new scenarios in it. And it's sort of meant to be the ability to play Memoir 44 on a much, much larger scale. And so this game actually comes with two boards that are enormous. I mean, I don't know exactly what, I don't know the dimensions of them, but when they're all folded up and when this package is, you know, put together, the boards are about, I would say, three.
He's holding up two fingers right now.
Yeah. Sorry. It's like probably 3 to 4 inches thick. So we're talking about some many folds in these boards.
Do you want to convert that into metric for our European listeners?
No, but I'm sure it's somewhere close to 6,000 centimeters.
I guess Canadians use metric too.
I think so.
Okay. That's all I got.
Okay. Very good. So, you know, for those of you who are fans of Memoir 44 and have enjoyed maybe like the Overlord scenarios where you play with two boards, I think this is even going to be on a grander scale and looks like it might be a lot of fun. You know, that's a game that I just have the base game for it. I don't have any of the multiple expansions that are come out for it, but it's a really cool rule set. And if you enjoy playing, I've got to play the Overlord scenario, one of those scenarios last year at Origins. And
you do have a Diet Pepsi stained...
I do map, yeah. That's the Tigers in the Snow map. Yeah, it's around here somewhere. So, yeah, please, if you get these boards, don't spill Diet Pepsi on them. So, feel free to check those out. And then also some real quick news from Fantasy Flight Games, who we love.
Yes, of course.
They've been releasing just a ton of stuff. I don't know. They must have like hundreds, thousands of people working up there because it seems like they're releasing new stuff all the time. And the newest announcement that we've heard recently is that they're going to be making a new version of this dungeon crawling game called Dungeon Quest, which I think came out in the 80s or something from Games Workshop. Hmm. And, you know, being a relatively new gamer, I don't have a lot of, you know, old Hagrid experience. I'm not a Redbox player of D&D, and so I don't really know a whole lot about Dungeon Quest, but I hear that it is a great game from the past that they're going to be updating and putting some cool Fantasy Flight Chrome on.
So. Yeah, I've not heard of it. I heard of Hero Quest. I've played Dungeon, but not Dungeon Quest.
It's like spin the wheel of fantasy themed games. Dungeon Quest Hero Crawl
Gold Edition.
Gold Edition, yeah. Hammer. So be sure to check that out. Check out fantasyflightgames.com for all the news and all the new stuff that they have coming out as well. So that's what I got for news.
I think that closes out the inbox.
I think it does. Could you tell them how they can get a hold of us again?
If you want to get a hold of us, you can email us at GameOnInbox.
That's game on. Drop the ball there. GameOnInbox@gmail.com.
That's right. Or you can call us at the Game On Hotline.
That's oh, I like that. That's 4138 Game On.
The hotline. I need a tip. All right. So we will move into our big deal where we talk some tech.
Let's do it. The big deal.
As far as deals go, this one's pretty big. All right, it's time for the big deal where we're going to have a little tech talk. We're going to talk about how technology, which is these days is a lot more prevalent.
Back in my day.
But like we mentioned, the open with smartphones and netbooks and more power is getting smaller. We're going to talk about how that affects the gaming hobby, which is pretty much a technology-free zone most of the time.
Seems to be, yeah. And I think that a lot of the people that are interested in tabletop gaming like that.
Mm-hmm.
I think that I'm one of those people.
Yeah.
That in general, the reason why I like to play board games and card games and role-playing games over video games is because I like the pieces and I like the setting the board up and I like, you know, all those things that go along with that.
It's kind of a grounding thing, you know. It keeps you, you know, in a world where so many things are digital and so many things are technology enhanced, it's kind of nice just to pull out Talisman or whatever, you know, your game of your choice. I don't know why I said Talisman.
Okay.
Of all the games to play. Yeah. No, you know, to pull out a game and just spend a few hours and have a lot of fun doing that. And you're just kind of disconnected, you know, it's nice.
Yeah.
Of course, I'm a grumpy old man. I'm going to end up living in the hills by myself someday. But.
Probably true. But hey, we'll be able to game online together. That's right. Maybe. You know, I feel like gaming technology falls into two main categories. There is gaming technology that provides complete new gaming experiences, like new ways to play games. And then there's gaming technology that basically is a tool or an accessory to help you through some of the mundane details of playing a tabletop game.
Right. It's not a standalone game. It's just there to assist you.
So on that front, there have been a lot of advances recently, in especially via iPhone and the iPhone apps and things like that. And I guess as the Android phones and those other these other app stores pop up, I'm sure you'll see more and more of those kind of things for those platforms. But things like scorekeeping. So there's a lot of games where the scorekeeping part of it that you're doing at the end of the game or maybe at the end of your turn is just kind of a mundane counting exercise and can be a little bit of a pain.
Yeah. And Agricola. So there's,
well, Agricola is a great example, yeah, of a game that, you know, you got the, they even give you like a pad of score sheets where, you know, marking down how many cattle, how many sheep, you know, and then the scoring is kind of non-intuitive too, that if you don't have any sheep, then you look, you know, you lose money and or lose points. So there's an application called, I believe it's called Score.
Yep, I've got it open right now.
Okay, and tell us a little bit about Score, because Cody's got an iPhone, I don't, I'm still living in the dark ages, yeah. 2002.
Score is one of the very first apps I got on my iPhone. This was about two years ago. And it is, at its core, it can just keep score for up to six players. You can assign them colors, or you can actually take a picture of them and have their face show up next to their score, which is kind of neat.
Yeah.
So you can track victory points for that. So say you're playing Ticket to Ride and you don't want, for whatever reason, you don't want to move the little kind of half cylinder around the board. You can just click on your phone and you can add them in increments of 1, 5, or 10. But what the really neat thing about Score is it's got these modules that they're continually adding to, people make for. So say you have, you know, I'm looking at them right now. They've got one for Agricola. They have 1960 has one, you know, for counting electoral votes. Let's see what else they got.
That was another one I was going to mention, is 1960. The end game of that is painful because it's basically counting up to like 200 and something. So
yeah. I mean, most of these games I don't want to play, but you know, they've got like Puerto Rico, Lost Cities, Dungeon Lords, you know, Citadels, things like that. But anyway, it's I don't know why Citadels would be that hard to score, but anyway, it's all of these options where you can kind of quickly score things. And I think for games like Agricola, this shaves a lot of time because you're not really getting the board game experience figuring out the score that way, you know?
Right,
it's
right.
Like, you know, this just speeds it up. But it's a handy little app. I want to say it retails for maybe 99 cents or maybe $1.99. It's fairly cheap, and I think it's worth it.
Okay. And so if you have another tool, if you have a smartphone like that or an iPhone specifically, whenever we played Dominion, there's a piece of software called, I think it's called
D-Minion.
D-Minion.
Yeah. One of my favorites. You can tell it which sets you have. You know, say you only have the base set and Seaside. It will give you a random 10 based on those sets. It also has the promo cards. It has the Stash promo card already in it that hasn't been released in the U.S.
Oh, nice.
So that's pretty neat. Because with Dominion, I like to play with just 10 random from all sets. And so instead of doing the randomizer, I just randomize it and it gives you 10. And it even asks you... when you reload it, it says, "Want me to shuffle again, my lord?" You say, "No, carry on," or "Yes, minion."
Oh, very nice.
Yeah, I like it. It makes me feel good. You can even ban cards. So say you don't want to play with Treasure Map
because it's broken.
Because it's a horribly broken card. You can turn Treasure Map off and then go from there.
That's great.
I believe when I got it, it was 99 cents. And if you're a Dominion player at all, definitely pick it up. It's called D-Minion.
Okay. And you know, with the Alchemy expansion coming out at the end of this month, I would imagine they'll be updating that pretty quickly.
Yeah.
So that'll be a good thing to get to. If you're a miniatures player, things, one of the most tedious tasks in miniatures, army building is, is actually coming up with your list, you know, with what models you're going to play with. It's a lot easier for a game like War Machine now with models, you know, this is a four-point model. But back when it was like, you know, a Warjack was, you know, 27 points, it, you mm-hmm. know, it was a little bit more difficult to figure out all the math of that. And so if you're a 40K player or a War Machine player, there are applications out there for that. For Privateer Press products specifically, there's one called iBodger.
Mm-hmm. B-O-D-G-E-R.
B-O-D-G-E-R, yep. That you can enter in all the stuff that you have, and you can build your army list very quickly using that application. So
it's also a nice just kind of inventory tool. Yeah. You can put your whole collection and then build armies from that collection.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you've got a lot of many, you know, my army's not to the point where I need to inventory it necessarily, but mm-hmm. if you've got a lot of minis, that may be a way to go.
Yeah, there's a company called Lone Wolf Development that makes a product called Army Builder, and they also make something called Hero Lab for building D&D characters and things like that. So, and that's not an iPhone thing so much as it's a computer application. So there's a lot of computerized tools that can mm-hmm. help you with all of those sort of mundane tasks. Tell me a little bit about D&D Online, and is there some D&D tools for like technology tools for creating characters and stuff?
Yeah, they haven't. This is for 4th edition.
Okay.
They haven't really released anything that's smartphone friendly yet.
Okay.
Which is if they tap into that, I think they'd really do well.
Yeah.
But they've released this kind of suite of tools where they have two main programs. One's called the Character Builder, and one is Adventure Tools. And a Character Builder is a program that can get updated every month if you have an active D&D Insider subscription. And it basically, I think I've mentioned it before, it makes buying the splat books, as they're called, you know, that have the new races and classes, it makes them irrelevant.
They're called splat books?
Yeah, because like splat, there's some stuff.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. It makes them irrelevant because every month you're getting this new, you're getting all of the new feats, all of the new equipment, races, classes, everything kind of put into this program. And it's actually a really nice thing because I haven't had to buy a book and it's automatically updated with any errata that comes out.
Hmm.
So it's actually a neat little program. The other one's called Adventure Tools, which is for dungeon masters. Right now they've only got the monster builder part of it, but it has all of the monsters that have been in any supplement from the first monster manual on. You can change their stats. You can make custom monsters for your game if you want to do that. So it's pretty neat.
Cool.
Yeah, this is all built into... they promised a whole kind of suite of features when they announced 4th edition. Not a lot of those went through. So they have those two programs, and then they have an online... This is a browser-based thing called the D&D Compendium, which is basically a keyword search, every rule, every item, class, race, again. But it's all on one website. You can search, and it shows you every change they've made to it, and... pretty much just an exhaustive list of everything 4th edition.
Great. Well, and of course, the internet in general, I think, is just, you know, we're going to talk about technology with mm-hmm. gaming as far as a resource. You know, there's websites galore where they'll give you lots of information, you know, that I think can enhance your game experience. One thing that's been nice when we play board games, excuse me, is that recently, if we have like a rules question, you know, Cody will just say, do you want me to BGG it? Yeah, it's yep. like a verb now.
Yep.
You know, so we have a rules question. It's one nice thing about BoardGameGeek.com is that if you've played something and you have a rules question, likely 15 other people have already had that same rules question and have already posted about it. And it's real easy, you know, especially if you have an iPhone.
And there's a dedicated app for BGG.
Oh, there's a BGG
app. And it's free.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
So that you can very easily find that information. So mm-hmm. just have that at your fingertips is such a good thing.
Yeah. And
so,
if you're into logging plays, you can do that. And it's
if that's your thing. Yeah.
Yeah. I can't get into it.
He tried, though. You tried that for a while, didn't
yeah.
you? So, you know, these kind of things that are... tools that will help you in your gameplay. I think these are all great.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm in favor of all these things. I've been going back and forth as to whether I want to get a smartphone or not. Our contract, my wife's contract and I, it's kind of coming up at the end of the year here, and we'll need to make our decision as to whether we want to make the leap to that kind of a phone or
yeah.
not. But I think that all these things that will, when you sit down to the game table and they make things go faster and will help you get to the fun part of your tabletop experience, I think it's a good thing. I mean, do you see any downside to those kind of things?
Yeah, I think there can be some downsides, and I'll speak mainly on an RPG level.
Of course.
We're going to get into things like the iPad, and I can give you my opinion on that. But I think for the most part, you know, there's like dice roller apps, and there's things on netbooks and laptops, and I think that detracts from it
Oh, yeah, we didn't mention dice rolling apps, but that I don't like those at all.
Yeah,
that
it's just a waste, I think. Yeah, it's like, and I like dice, so pick them up and roll them.
Yeah.
But
it's not really saving you any time to roll. It's actually, it usually takes more time for the dice to settle on the app.
Yeah. Because a lot of the time, if there's any lull in the action, anyone that's on a netbook or a laptop or even a smartphone will just be dinking around on it, you know, instead of kind of focusing and seeing what the other players are doing. So I think control technology, at least on the RPG side of it, and even on the board game side of it, is the way to go. You know, is this making my gameplay faster? Is this enhancing it, or is it just technology for technology's sake? And right. That's kind of a good thing to keep in mind in all of these things we're discussing.
Yeah, and things like those smartphones and laptops and netbooks at the table, I think it ends up sometimes, if you're not careful with how you use it, it becomes the equivalent of having a television in the room.
Yeah,
you know, that people are just constantly looking at, except everybody has their own individual television that they're looking at. Yep. And that can really be a downside. But other than that, I think that these kind of modifications have been a real enhancement to gaming in general. So that's one side of the equation here. And then the other side is complete new game experiences, you know, very innovative ways to play games using technology that are different. And we're not talking about video games here. You know, video games are their own, you know, thing there, from, you know, Atari all the way up to now and all the amazing games that they make for Xbox 360 and Wii and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. That's its own thing there. But just, here we're mainly just talking about tabletop games and how you can use technology for new experiences there. So, you know, things like the iPad. So this is something that just came out recently. And, you know, Cody, tell us a little bit about some of the stuff that's coming out for the iPad that you know about.
What they have as far as games right now, one of their premier apps they came out with was Scrabble for the iPad.
Okay.
Now, it works where you just kind of pass the iPad and you put the letters on it. You know, it's very touch sensitive. You're dragging the letters on the board. You know, with in two players, you're passing the iPad, or you could have more players.
How do you keep your letters secret?
They only come up on your turn. So I guess that's the only downside is.
So you have to kind of hide the whole iPad when you're doing your turn, so the other person doesn't see what
right. you're doing. Right, and then you hand it to them. And that's not so bad, you know, if you're in an area where you can't really bring a board out. But I've seen where they have options where if you have multiple people with iPads, then you can, like, you know, connect them via Wi-Fi. Or if you have an iPad and iPhones, you can do it. And I'm like, when do we miss the point?
Right.
You know? It's like, just bring a board if you're lugging around, you know, pounds of equipment just to do this.
Right.
One other game that's come up is was a surprising one to me, and that's Small World.
Yeah.
Came out with an iPad app. And this is Days of Wonder, of course, had a hand in it. The one caveat is that it's two-player only.
Okay.
And there's no AI. It's meant for two human players.
Okay.
So, you know, that you set it down in front of, you know, in between you, just on a table, and then you play
You can actually slide the pieces over. And
you're
that
sliding
kind of
the pieces. You're taking things, you know.
Now, as far as you know, is it kind of dummy proof? Is it actually know the does the game know the rules of the game?
Yeah. It's not like something like Vassal, where not Tom Vassal, but the Vassal program,
where it's like not just like a digital board with just
right. It plays again. You know, if you try to do something illegal, it won't let you do it, and it has rules explanation and it tells you. But apparently, it's got a light footprint. You know, there's no music. There's no really superfluous things. It's just the game.
It's not like you move your goblins onto a piece and three-dimensional goblins pop up and start fighting.
We're taking this place.
Because that reminds me of there was a game for, I want to say it was for Xbox 360, called Eye of Judgment.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like a collectible card game with a camera element to that interacted with your Xbox, to where you'd have a board and you have this camera that was mounted over the board. And when you laid down your card, the camera would read it, and then it would pop up on the screen and show you. And it would be like, you know, I pull my red dragon out, and then on the screen, the red dragon, wah, you know, would come out and, you know, shoot fire and all that kind of stuff. And that did not last very long, I don't think.
Yeah, and I don't know if this would be, I don't think it's meant to be a replacement, you know, if you have the game.
Yeah.
But it's a night, if you and, you know, say your husband or wife, or, you know, a friend you're together a lot with, if you play it a lot, it's nice because there's not a lot of bits to it, you know,
Small World. Airplane or something,
right? You know, you just set it down and you play it, and I've heard good things. And I think that's just scratching the surface. I think they may be testing that to see what comes out next. There's been talks of Memoir 44 for PC, maybe iPad. You know,
Well, there's a lot of games right now that we haven't really touched on this yet, but board games that they've put online. I mean, on Brett Spielwelt, for example, I play Dominion online quite a bit because the interface for that is really good. You know, there's a lot of Kingsburg's version of Kingsburg on Brett Spielwelt that's pretty good. You know, these things that can be translated to this portable digital format, I think, can be pretty cool. When you're on the go, you know, because it's really difficult to travel with board games and to be able to pull them out in real quick situations. So I think that's really good. I think you just asked the right question a few minutes ago where you said, when have we missed the point? So something where you're enhancing your experience by, you know, this is now portable. You know, this is something we can pull out on an airplane or, you know, in a real, you know, standing in line someplace and play a game. But, you know, the Eye of Judgment thing that I mentioned, you know, I feel like they kind of missed the point there where you know, that isn't the great part about a collectible card game is, you know, the three-dimensional cool fighting element. It's the strategy part of it. And, you know, so I'm just throwing that out there. Yeah. So, you know, other things that have come out recently or that are going to come out is Microsoft has put out or is – I don't know if it's out yet or if it's just like a real limited release or something or if it's still in production. But it's this tabletop Surface called the Microsoft Surface, and it's kind of like a big touch, like a table basically. Yeah. I don't think it's really meant even to be something that people would just buy to put in their house. I think it's almost meant more on a commercial level at this point, but where you have this touch screen where, you know, it can interact with objects that you're placing on it. So I've even seen some videos online where people would like put their probably not their iPhone, but their Microsoft product, a phone on there, and maybe they want, or their camera, like I said, they want their digital camera, and they'll put the camera, just set it there on the table, and then it will read via Bluetooth or whatever all the pictures, and the pictures would just spread out onto the table. Yeah. And then you can just move your finger around and just, you know, and move the pictures all around. So, and you know, what could this possibly do for gaming?
Well, there's a there have been a few videos of people playing D&D on the Microsoft Surface where, you know, it makes the battle grid, and say you're casting a spell and it has a you know, a certain kind of radius of this, it shows you, you know, certain squares will light up and say you can target here. You can mark status effects because they interact with the miniatures on the table. And just it looks great. You know, a lot of cool stuff there.
Yeah.
I don't know if it'll really catch fire just because of the expense. And it still looks kind of fiddly. I mean, nothing's ever going to beat really counting out five squares. You know,
yeah.
Nothing's going to streamline that process. But it would be cool for special events. Like I said, this may be something where if the technology becomes a lot cheaper, it can be in our homes, you know, before too long, but it looks real neat. I don't know how functional it would be and how much it would save time.
Yeah. You know, I almost think that something like that would be cool if you had maybe a whole series of board game boards that were part of the Surface, you know, and maybe you still had the pieces, like the, you know, the bits that went, like Memoir 44, for example. Let's say you still had the miniatures, but it actually presented a digital board that maybe when you put the pieces down, they interacted with the board in some cool and useful way that might make the game more fun. Because, I mean, you know, again, when have you missed the point?
Yeah, that's close to the line for me.
Yeah.
I don't know if that really adds a lot.
Because, you know, one of the biggest challenges when you're talking about having a digital form of a board game is just keeping stuff secret. Like having a hand of cards that's secret, or having tiles or something like that that are kept from other players. When you have this common virtual board or a electronic board out there, it's really hard to do that. You know, you mentioned with the Scrabble thing. So I don't know how they could figure that out.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I know one thing where, you know, kind of going back to the iPad, gaming PDFs, you know, RPG PDFs have become a really big thing, especially with small press publishers, because it's not a lot of overhead and they can get it out there. And a lot of the legacy products, you know, I've got a whole boatload of first and second edition D&D PDFs. The iPad, I didn't think would be very good at that, at being a reader. I don't really get into the whole Kindle and e-reader thing. I'm like, just pick up the book.
Buy a book.
But for RPG PDFs, it's a little different because it's not a novel, and it's something where you don't have to carry around all these books. You know, you can just search for it. And apparently iPad handles that really, really well. One of the GMing blogs that I read, it's called Gnome Stew, gnomestew.com. They did a three-part feature on, it's called A GM's Guide to the iPad. And their third part has videos of just them using it in their games. And the way they use it is remarkable. If you are into GMing and thinking about an iPad purchase, check that out, because what they do with it's pretty amazing. They go from, you know, looking at the books to using it as an initiative tracker, showing a map of the world and zooming in on cities, and passing around like a handout, like, oh, you have a letter from the Baron. Here's what it says. And you pass around the iPad. And
oh, that's cool.
Pretty slick.
Because it seems like what we're saying here is that when the technology is just making the game easier,
mm-hmm.
Or faster, then that's kind of the good tech.
Yeah.
But when it's just trying to create a different experience or a different emotion or whatever, I think it's failing at that currently, you know. Yeah. Like I still don't, nothing that I've seen regarding playing a tabletop game in a virtual environment is making me want to go and do that, you know. Yeah. I just don't think it's gonna be that much more fun to justify that expense.
Yeah.
Yeah, things like that, I don't know, I looking into the future, it just seems like that could be something that I think 10 15 years and 20 years into the future, that everybody might just have some kind of a device that's like their, you know, their book, their book bag, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine like, I mean, this is away from gaming, I guess, but imagine like college kids that have all their college textbooks are just on an iPad. They just carry that around with them and
yeah.
Look stuff up. So
back in our day,
I hadn't even thought about it for PDFs for role playing game books, that you just bring that with you, and it's probably much, much easier to look stuff up than. Or search and that kind of stuff, yeah. Than to have to search through a book.
And in that situation, I still think it's good if only one person has it. Like if only the GM has it. You know, yeah, there's tools to where everyone could have their character sheet on their iPad, but then you get, you know, you know, if they're bored for 2 minutes, you know, they might go on YouTube or something.
It's
If you're kind of controlling that, and it's RPG, you still want to keep some pen and paper element to it.
Yeah. So I guess, you know, just final thoughts, I guess, about technology in general. We've given you some examples of some things that are coming out, because there's lots more that people are developing. But, Cody, what are your overall thoughts about, I mean, I've talked about mine quite a bit, but what are your overall thoughts about technology and gaming and where it's going, and what are you thinking?
I don't think we'll ever get to a point where the virtual boards outnumber the regular ones. No. I just think that board gaming, it's been around this long, and I think it will continue to be. And some people are so anti-technology that, you know, they'll never even think of that. And what you mentioned earlier, it seems like portability is where the virtual kind of medium shines,
mm-hmm.
you know, because taking Power Grid on a plane might be kind of hard. Playing it on an iPad, much more, you know, much easier. So
still not fun for you.
But it's those kind of things where we can kind of expand the hobby that way. You know, people might try Small World on an iPad, and then I've seen screenshots from the game where they're like, where they have kind of promos for the board game. Uh-huh. They're like, oh, if you like this, try the full version of Small World, you know, the board game. So I don't think we'll ever get to where we're playing, you know, 3D holo chess like in Star Wars, you know. I don't think it'll get that bad.
Crazy squares.
Yeah, jeez. Sorry. A little next gen there.
Yeah. I've been watching a lot of reruns.
But I think there are a lot of good tools out there. You just have to be very discerning about it, and I think have a one-person filter for it. You know, if everyone's using uh-huh. the tools, I think it gets very bloated. But there are a lot of good things out there, so it would do well not to dismiss all of them.
We do seem to be a culture that gets pretty easily distracted.
Oh, yeah.
By things. And we've been given tools that facilitate that. So I like what you said that about having a one-person filter there.
What I said about what?
What?
I got distracted.
Oh, were you looking at your iPhone? Ha ha. All right. Well, I think that kind of wraps up our big deal discussion about technology. Now, we just talked about a few things, but as always, we feel like the listeners that listen to this show are way smarter and more savvy than we are. And so if you have any new technology stuff that you'd like to talk about or let us know about regarding tabletop games, we'd love to hear about it. So please write us at the Game On Inbox.
At gameoninbox@gmail.com.
Or as always, give us a call at the Game On Hotline.
There you go.
At 4138 Game On.
I'll also set up the iPad fund.
Oh, there you go.
Operators are standing by.
Yeah, yeah. So I think that's our big deal.
All right.
All right, we're going to move into our Buy Tried and I. We're going to be talking about some nuns who are on the run.
Buy, try, or deny.
Game reviews for the common gamer.
It's that simple.
Convents as the places where we pray, but let us tell you, convents are much more than meant to be. We pray in tonight to share with you the humor of the night.
Nonsense is habit forming. Let us tell you why.
When a sister gets a boss.
All right, it's buy, try, or deny, and we're going to take advice that Shakespeare once gave us, and we're going to get thee to a nunnery, as it were.
Oh, my.
Do you like that?
I did. I did like that.
Here's John with the rules.
All right, well, we're going to be talking about Nuns on the Run. This is a new game from Mayfair Games. It's for 2 to 8 players. Yep.
And you have to sing Nuns on the Run at least once during the game.
Nuns on the Run.
There it is.
Okay, I did it. And this is designed by Frederick Moyerson. And it plays in about 45 minutes, ages 10 and up. And the flavor text on the rules here says, it gives a Bible verse from Numbers 32:23, to be sure your sin will find you out. the novices are on the loose. Temptation has lured them out of their cells, and they hope not to be caught by the abbess and the prioress. But the guards are swift, and their hearing is excellent. So it'll take craftiness and a bit of luck in order to make it back to their beds without being caught. So the theme of this game is you have a board that represents a convent? A convent, an abbey, I guess. Yeah. This
we're not Catholic.
No, sorry. This religious order of some sort where there are novice nuns that are in their cells, mm-hmm. their bedrooms at night. And then you have the abbess and the prioress, who are, I guess, kind of the head ladies of the convent there, that are going to be kind of patrolling around. And these nuns are wanting to leave their room where they're going to be searching out their secret wish, the thing that they've been longing for, and they have to go and try to get it and then come back but not get caught by the abbess or the prioress. So it's sort of a deduction game, but sort of not. It's almost like the thing I kept thinking about is it's almost like a board game version of Splinter Cell.
Oh, yeah.
You know, in the video game Splinter Cell, you're Metal Gear Solid or something like that. You're trying to sneak around and not get caught by the guards. And you know, when you alert the guards, you make noise. You make that noise. And, what was that noise? You know, they walk around.
Did you hear that?
Yep. And so this is sort of a board game version of that with a very silly theme tacked onto it. So the object of the game is to win, and the way that you win is by having your novice make it all the way to their secret wish and then back to the cell without getting caught. But in order to get their secret wish, they actually have to get the keys to the room where the secret wish is. And by secret wish, these are things like, you know, a bottle of brandy or a book of dark magic or, you know, a letter from mom, something like that. This is what they're looking for. So they have to sneak around the abbey, and they have to find the keys to the room. Then they have to go to the room, and then they have to make it back. And this would all seem very easy except for the fact that you have the abbess and the prioress that are going to be walking around. And if they catch you, then you have to go back to your cell they're going to kind of be slowing you down there. So this game, all of the movement in this game is done secretly. And you have these pads of paper that are like log sheets that each novice nun is going to get in the game to mark where their movement is. All of the locations in the game are marked by little dots with numbers on them. And there's like more than 100 of them, I think. And so each novice is going to start off in their room, and then when they move on their turn, they're going to be writing down what space they end up in, and then also how many spaces they moved. And each nun is given a different a set of cards that represent the different kinds of ways that they can move. So on your turn, the novice is going to be able to either stand still, they can sneak, they can walk, or they can run. And so if they decide to stand still, then of course they're not going to go any spaces at all. If they sneak, then they can move 1 or 2 spaces. If they walk, they can move 3 or 4 spaces. And if they run, they can move any number of spaces, up to 5. And so at the beginning of your turn, each nun is going to select their card as to what kind of movement they're going to do. And then you're going to jot down on your log sheet what space you ended up in, and you're going to log in how many spaces that you moved. And there's sort of a little shorthand notation as to how to do that. It's real super easy. And then you're going to reveal those cards. So, you know, and your little token that has your nun on it, your novice nun, is going to actually stay in your cell unless you happen to be caught by the abbess or the prioress. This is a game very much about line of sight. I would say this game is more about line of sight than a miniatures game.
Maybe.
You know, because along the way, you're going to have to be checking to see, can the Abbess and the Prioress see you? And if they can see you, then you have to kind of reveal yourself. So you're sneaking all around here, and you can remain invisible unless you happen to be in the line of sight of one of the Abbess or the Prioress, in which case you'll have to reveal yourself. So you'll go ahead and make your movements on the paper there, and then you're going to reveal how exactly that you moved. And so then, I should mention on the fact here that when you play this game, one player is going to be playing the guards, the Abbess and the Prioress, playing both of them. And then the other players are each going to be playing a nun. So it's sort of a one versus all game, very Fury of Dracula-like, right, Cody?
Yes.
I don't know, he likes that game. And so in the game that we played, did you play the guards or did you play a novice nun?
I play the guards.
I'm shocked. So anyway, you're going to make your movements, and then you're going to be revealing your movement cards, and then you're going to roll for making noises. So in this game, if you happen to ever be in the line of sight of the Abbess or the Prioress, you have to move your token to that dot to show that you were there. Now, if you move out of the line of sight of the Abbess or the Prioress during your movement, then they have these things called vanish tokens to show that, you know, you were there and then you vanished and you're out of line of sight. And you'll place those on the board. And you want to avoid doing this if you're a nun, because you're a novice, because you don't want the guard to know where you are or where you were. You want to stay sneaking around the whole time. But even if you happen to have evaded their eye, you might not have evaded their ear. And so after you've played your different card, your movement card, then you're going to roll for making noises to see if you've made any noises. So you're going to roll 1d6 that comes with the game, and then you're going to apply the modifier that is based upon the card that you played. So if you are running, then you have no modifier at all. If you are walking, you have a -1. Sneaking gives you a -2. Standing still gives you a -3. The number that's the result there after you apply that modifier is the number of spaces away from the Abbess or the Prioress that they can hear noises. And so, for example, if you rolled a 5 and you were walking, then you would apply that -1 modifier for walking, and you would get a 3. And so that would mean that the Abbess and the Prioress, you would count 3 spaces in any direction away from them, and that's how far away that they can hear noises. If you happen to be in one of those spaces that's that number of squares away, then that means that they have heard you. In which case, then the novice who was heard will take a little noise token and we'll put it next to the Abbess or the Prioress, whichever one applies, whichever guard it applies to, in the direction where you are. Again, your token's not on the board, but you know, and so the guards won't know exactly where you are, but you're going to have to put a noise token in that direction right next to the guard. So they'll be like, oh, there was a noise over that direction. And so you're going to roll for noises, and then that will be sort of the end of your turn there. So that's the novice's turn, is basically you do your movement, you reveal those movement cards to show how you moved, and then you roll for making noises. Then the guards are going to take their turn. And so then their turn is slightly different. The tokens for the Abbess and the Prioress are these stand-up tokens that are on, there's like a little plastic base, and then there's a cardboard stand-up. And so they're actually going to be on the board the entire time, and they'll mark their movement. They also have a front and a back, and they have a little cute cartoony artwork of the front of the Abbess and the back of the Abbess. And
you don't want to see the front or the back of the Abbess.
No, you don't. And, it's pretty terrible, but the Abbess was rather plump, mm-hmm. and the Prioress is very skinny, and so I think we started just calling them fat and skinny because it was easier. But anyway. At the beginning of the game, each of the guards is going to be assigned a particular path card. And on the board, there are sort of it almost looks like subway lines. There's like these different colored paths that kind of snake throughout the board, and they'll go from one area to the next. And so the each guard will get a card at the beginning that will say where they're going. So if there weren't any novices on the board, if there wasn't anything bad going on, these guards would just be kind of patrolling in this, you know, in this particular path. So there might be a card that says that you're going from the Abbess's cell to the pharmacy, you know, which is like up the hallway there. So, and then there would be a line on the board, a colored line that would show where they would be going. And so that would be the normal movement for a guard, is that they would just be moving along that path. So the guards also have movement cards, and except that with the guards, they're only going to walk or run. They're not going to sneak or stand still or walk or sneak or stand still. So they'll select those cards, and then the abbess and the priors will each move along their path. And they might be different paths that are moving around the board. And as they move each square, each dot that they go to, the novices have to determine whether that place where they moved is in line of sight of their novice. And if it is, then you're going to have to, the novice is going to have to reveal themselves. If the novice, if the guards either hear a noise, or if they see a vanish token, or if they see the actual token of the novice themselves, then the player who's playing them is allowed to deviate from their sort of pre-prescribed path and can go after that novice. And so then there's some specific situations where once they get to the novice, or if the novice goes away and the vanish token disappears, they're required to go back onto their path. It's very video game-like, I think, because you have, you know...
It's like the guards on Metal Gear Solid, you know, they kind of pace back and forth between a box.
Yeah, and then if they see you, then they'll come after you. But then if you hide for long enough, they eventually just kind of go back to their normal path. Yep. This is sort of how this works in this game. So each guard is going to move along their path, looking for the novices each time, and then they'll reveal their movement cards to show whether they walked or ran. This is important because if the abbess and the prioress walked, then they can roll for noises and they can hear noises. If they ran, then they can't roll for noises. I guess they're running too fast. They couldn't hear anything. And so you'll be able to reveal those cards, and then you'll roll for noises on the guard's turn too. So after the novices move, there's a roll for noises. Then after the guards move, there's another roll for noises. Then you're going to be applying these noise tokens as it works exactly the same way, as far as the guards will roll a die, and then the novices will apply their modifier and will determine whether they were within range to hear, to be heard by the guards. And then they'll place those noise tokens as appropriate. Then you will move the turn marker. Now, you know, I mentioned that the win condition for the novices is that they have to go to a room that has the keys to their secret wish room. Then they have to go to the secret wish room and get their secret wish. Then they have to come back. And as far as getting those things, they just have to kind of land on the dot where those things happen. And, you know, then they'll be able to, you know, then that counts for, there's no tokens or anything. It just kind of counts that they got the thing that they were looking for. If you get caught by the abbess and the prioress, you lose your secret wish. If you've gotten your keys, you don't lose the keys. But if you do get caught, then you're required to walk in the direction of your cell until you're out of the line of sight of the abbess and the priors. Like once they catch you, you know, you get to kind of move back to your cell, and the abbess and priors will go back onto their path. Just, you know, they'll just kind of leave you alone for a turn. And then once you're out of range again, then you can sneak around and you can, you know, try to evade them and move around again. But the way the end condition works is that the guards will win the game if one of two things happens. They either have to capture novices equal to the number of players, and I haven't been able to figure out, even by looking at Board Game Geek, it's been a little bit nebulous as to whether it's number of novice players or number of total players.
Yeah.
So, like, we played a four-player game, mm-hmm. and we couldn't figure out whether Cody needed to get four novices or just three, you know?
Yeah.
So, if you've played and you know that, you know, write us and let us know.
Yeah, I lean towards total players because I was close to winning there. I think I only needed one more. We were calling them caps. Need one more capture to win. So I think it was by design where they said it's just something where you're a little surprised because you're like, oh, well, that seems odd, but okay.
Right. So, I mean, it's spelled out. Here's how it's spelled out in the rule. It says the guards win if they accumulate capture points greater than or equal to the number of players. For example, 6 capture points in a 6-player game. So that would seem like that would include the... But there's been some dispute on Board Game Geek about that. But
you want me to be GG it?
No, it's okay. The other way that the guards can win is that if none of the novices have won or have gotten their stuff back to their cell by the end of the 15th turn...
The sun track marker.
It's like the sun track marker on Last Night on Earth. Then the guards win the game. The only other element in the game is that there is a blessing card. It's like a one-time special ability that you can play. Each of the novices get one of those, and each of the guards get one of those as well. But that is the basics of Nuns on the Run. The real interesting part about this game that makes it I think kind of a challenge maybe for new gamers is the line of sight rules. And because the way that the artwork is on the board, it's pretty easy to see, you know, if you're behind a wall or something that you're not going to have line of sight. It's when you get into these open areas like gardens and trees and stuff like that, and the inside of the chapel where there's benches and things like that, it becomes real difficult to see what has line of sight. And this becomes important because as you're moving the abbess and the prioress, the novices are having to check each time to see if they are within line of sight or not. There is a rather extensive chart on the back of the rule book that tells you, you know, it's like a big grid that says, you know, number 65 to number 39. Does that have line of sight? And there's like a check mark or an X. You know, it's like a big grid so you can tell.
It's pretty slick.
Yeah, yeah.
It's nice because you can just say, can I see that sheet, instead of kind of looking and maybe giving yourself away. Right. You know, a little bit like Fury of Dracula, you know, giving yourself away. Oh, well, maybe, yes, I've got line of sight.
Right. So if it's just, let me look at the sheet, then it's not
a
big deal.
Nice addition there. It's not something you'd think most people would think of, I think.
Yeah. So let's just get into our buy points for Nuns on the Run. Cody, what are your buy points? Let's just tell our listeners one more time just about kind of how we do our reviews here.
I thought you said you would tell them. Allow me. We separate our points into a game into buy, try, and deny points. So instead of giving you a concrete kind of yes, no, or maybe on a game, you'll be able to discern kind of from our points really what we think of it, and we'll tell you. Yeah. For buy points, we're going to tell you the things that are great about this game that make you really want to buy it. For the try points, we're going to discuss things that may be good for some and not so good for others. And then our deny points, we're going to tell you about points that, frankly, we feel will be good for no one.
Yep. So what are your buy points for Nuns on the Run?
It's unique. It takes elements from a few games, but I think the gameplay in and of itself is pretty unique.
Yeah.
It's funny. I mean, I think, you know, I've seen a post or two on Board Game Geek where they say, oh, this is offensive. I think it's tongue-in-cheek. I don't think it's done in an offensive manner.
No,
like I said, I'm not Catholic, so it doesn't affect me that much one way or the other. But
right. But
I think it's funny. I think it's tastefully done. And you're playing a bunch of nuns running around trying to avoid being caught by larger nuns.
They're on the run.
You're on the run.
Those nuns are on the run.
And there's a catchy song with it.
Exactly.
So it's fun, it's unique, and there's definitely nothing else like it out there. So
yeah.
Those are all buy points for me.
Okay. My buy points were, I think that it's got really cool artwork on it. And the artwork, I think, goes along with the tongue-in-cheek part of the game, of the theme. It's a very cartoony artwork. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's kind of almost looks kind of like Phil Foglio's or Girl Genius kind of,
yeah.
Sort of, but, you know, not quite that, you know, that modern, but it's just very cartoony, and, you know, the abbess and the prioress look very stern, and the little novice nurses just look very innocent, and, you know.
Nurses?
Did I say nurses? I looked down at the paper, and I saw, like, the white head coverings that looked like an old school nurse, but the novice nuns. So I think that's really fun. I think the component quality is pretty good in the game as well. And I think the rules are very clever too. So
if I can interrupt, you know, you're talking about components. I'm looking at the box. They didn't go overboard with box size.
No,
that's always one of my little pet peeves, is when you have games that could be probably a whole box size smaller, but, you know, they just wanted to make it bigger so more people would notice it. This is almost like just a little bookshelf game, the way the box is built.
Yeah, it's I'm trying to think of what would be a good comparison, but it's by no means a large square box.
No,
or
this is smaller than a Ticket to Ride box.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably the size of like a 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper, maybe about that size.
Yeah, so just a personal aside, I like that they kept it small and kept it compact.
Yeah, what about try points?
The line of sight rules, I think, can be tricky. I don't think they're impossible to get down, and especially with the chart on the back, it will take you a few plays to really get it. We had some moments in our first play where we really had to stop and we were trying to figure it out, and, you know, that can be kind of tricky. But I think once you get enough people playing it a few times, that gets a lot easier. The other thing is, I'm not going to mention, you know, player cheating, since it's all secret movement, because if you have people in your group that are going to do that, that's a whole nother issue anyway.
Yeah.
But if someone makes a mistake and it's not really factored in until much later, or maybe till the end, where they think they've won, but you see where they screw up, that could kind of derail the whole thing. So
yeah.
you want to check, double check, and then triple check that everyone knows how the movement works, so you don't get one of those kind of awkward, well, you ended the game, but you really didn't win because you made this move wrong, you know?
Yeah, then and everyone kind of looks around and goes, oh, no, well, we just
none's on the run.
45 minutes doing that. Yeah, I think that's that. My try points kind of center around the complexity of the game. That I think because it's got sort of the cartoony artwork, it looks like a really light game.
Mm-hmm.
And it's by no means a heavy game.
No.
But I wouldn't really call it a light game because I think that the fact that you have to check that line of sight each time, every player really needs to know what's going on and how to play. And so that's difficult sometimes with a new player. If you have to, and of course we were playing a game where all four of us were new players, but it makes it real challenging that if someone doesn't know how to write down the little I was gonna say orders, it's kind of like diplomacy. Yeah. With the orders, you know, if they don't have to write down the movement thing correctly, or they, you know, they miss something, then everybody's kind of keeping everything, you know, close to the hip. They're kind of, you know, not close to the hip, what I'm saying, you know, keeping everything kind of secret,
right?
And you know, so you can't have a whole lot of interaction anyway, you know, but if you screw up, then it's really difficult to, at the end. So I think the line of sight rules, I think, make this a much more complex game because every time that guard moves, every player is having to check to see whether they're line of sight or not. And, you know, I think that can have a little bit of clunkiness to it sometimes. We didn't have too much of a problem with it, but I think we also probably screwed up two or three times as far as line of sight and things like that.
That's entirely possible.
So there's that. So those are my try points. So what about deny points for this game?
One thing that this is actually a good that kind of leads into a bad is that it goes 2 to 8 players, and I think that's really neat that it kind of goes that high. But as a 2-player game and even as a 3-player game, I don't know if this game's that much fun.
No.
I think you really have to get at least 4 to really get the full value. And I think if you can get a full 8-player game of this going, I think it would be a blast. But a 2-player, it's one of those, you can do it. I don't know if you really should do it.
Okay. I think that the only real deny point that I can say for the game is I really thought the rules were really poorly written.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a shame because I think the pictures that they have in there and some of the examples for line of sight, I think the writers of the rules definitely wanted to focus on the line of sight issue. Like they have a whole page where they just talk about, here are some problem areas with the line of sight that are going to be tricky, and here are some examples. And that part was good. Every other part of it, I just sort of felt like, you know, as we were sitting down trying to play, that it was really hard to get the concept for when do we roll for noises? Is that now? When do we reveal the card? It wasn't explained very well at all. And, yeah. And you know, being the person who teaches the rules, I hate a rule book that if someone has a question about something, going and finding it takes forever. You know, it's just not laid out very well. So that's kind of a deny point for this one. I think that if you are Catholic and you maybe have some sensitivity to that kind to this theme, you know, that would be a deny. It's not a deny point for me because like I said, I feel like it's handled in a very sort of tongue in cheek manner, mm-hmm. but I could sort of see how if, you know, the thought of a nun wanting to go out and get a book of dark magic and bring it back, you know, that might be kind of unappealing, but, you know, like I said, take that for what it is. But overall, I think it's a pretty good game. Mm-hmm. I think it's not for everybody, you know, and I think it's deceiving that it looks lighter than it is.
Yeah, but I think you get a few plays under it, and I think if you have a group that can really get behind it, and the fact that it's cooperative, but yet it's not, you know, you all may be playing novices, and you're all trying to evade the nuns, but you're not really working together.
Right.
So, I don't know, it's a unique, it's a Jones Theory approved type of thing. There's nothing else like it. I would say definitely give it a shot and see if it's right for you.
There were a couple of situations in the game that I thought were kind of fun and exciting. There was a lot of some laughter and some fun where, especially when we knew that there was one guy that we were playing with, he kept getting revealed, you know, and we all kind of knew where he was. And then, when it came to the time for checking for a line of sight, you know, I revealed my player, and everybody's like, I didn't know you were over there, you know?
There's some cool moments there.
Yeah, so, you know, it is a game that creates those kind of moments. So, yeah, I thought it was pretty decent. So hopefully from what we said there, you can get an idea as to whether that's something you want to pick up. But that's Nuns on the Run. Are you ready to close out the show, dude?
Let's do it.
Well, Well, that just about wraps up another great episode of Game On with Cody and John. Thank you so much for listening.
Thanks.
We've got another great show coming up in a couple of weeks where we're going to be bringing you our first recipient of the Game On Seal of Approval.
I'm excited.
I'm excited about that too. So be sure to tune in and find out which friendly professional game store has been bestowed this high honor.
Ah, very good.
And what else we got going on?
We are still taking GM Academy submissions. So if you've got a RPG question that you would like my sage advice on, that sounded great.
Lovely.
My wonderful advice. You can email us or call us, and we will get that on the show.
That's right. And we also want to mention among other things that you're going to hear later as far as contact information, we want to tell you a little bit about our donation button. It doesn't cost a whole ton to put this show on, but to be able to get games in for review and to cover the costs of all of our stuff. We have a donation button set up on our website, gameonpodcast.com. And if you just click on that, it's a little PayPal transaction, and we appreciate any support that you can give us.
100% of proceeds go right back to the show.
As always. So join us in 2 weeks. We're looking forward to bringing you another great episode of Game On. And until then,
Game On.
This episode of Game On is sponsored by Myriad Games on behalf of friendly professional game stores everywhere. If you'd like to contact Cody and John, send them an email at gameoninbox@gmail.com or leave a voicemail at 413-8-GAME-ON. For more content, check out our website at gameonpodcast.com. Join our guild on boardgamegeek.com and connect with other fans of the show. Become a fan of our show on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Game On Podcast. Game On with Cody and John is a proud member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network. Check out other great shows on pulpgamer.com. Thanks for listening, and until next time, Game On.